Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Serpents of the Dawn by Adeline Winters, narrated by Nicole Zanzarella. Chapter 1. I'll never be able to look at Musaka again. It had been a long day, and it was about to get even longer. The wards surrounding my property clanged in my head, warning me of newcomers. Probably some new folk settling into my bed and breakfast for the night. There were a million things I would rather be doing than contemplating my outfit and sorting through neutral topics of conversation for a pack of violent shifters who saw me as an evil interloper intent on ensnaring their illustrious leader. Perhaps they wanted to discuss the weather. It was a few degrees warmer than average for the festive season. White Castle, a small town located in the Pelican State of Louisiana, was home to just under 2,000 folks, many of whom belonged to one of the three supernatural factions, vampires, shapeshifters, and elementals. The latter being me, an elemental with the power to control water. I was also half angel, thanks to my dear old dad, who was the angel of death, making me the daughter of death. Lucky me. Harry shot into my room and hovered 3 inches off the floor. In life, Harry had been an upstanding vampire, helping run a church support group which enabled vampires to live less murderous lives. In death, he'd refused the call of the light and instead pledged his afterlife loyalty to me. There was a lot to unpack in that statement. Contrary to popular belief, vampires weren't an abomination. They didn't explode on hallowed ground, they could walk in the daylight, and even occasionally enjoyed a good Italian meal laced with garlic. Sure, they drank human blood, but that never resulted in a turning. The only way to actually become a vampire was to be born one. Harry's brow crinkled. I believe you have a last-minute appointment in your office. Below the 3-story plantation house was my office and examination room. I was a fully qualified medical doctor who offered my services to the factions because the local emergency room was ill-equipped to deal with ailments that affected the supernatural community. Certain human powers knew of our existence, but for the majority of humanity, we were fantasy fiction. While the world was changing, becoming more accepting of differences and uniqueness, it was not a stretch of the imagination to think that a war would break out should our existence be revealed. The problem was, the head of the Order, who governed the elementals, was threatening our way of life. She was maneuvering the political landscape to drive us headfirst into a war. Eloise was her name, but I knew her better as Grandmother. I sighed. Whoever it was that darkened my doorstep would have to wait. I had a date with the principal and his strongest alphas, which spanned the differing species. I flung open my door and came face to face with Rebecca, my longest resident and vampire princess in hiding. She was the epitome of ethereal royalty, all long, slender limbs, golden hair, and stunning blue eyes. There's a pair of vampires waiting for you in your office, she declared. So I heard. Her eyes flicked over my shoulder. She couldn't see the dead, few could, but she knew of Harry's existence. He is always beating me to the news. I shut the door behind me. It's not a competition. Harry floated through the wall and appeared in front of us. And if it were, I would win, he declared. I rolled my eyes and began my descent down the stairs. I bypassed the principal's room. Hudson Abbott had moved himself into my home, declaring that as his mate, we should be living under the same roof. That was a month ago, and he was negotiating his time between running the pack and driving me nuts. It wasn't that I didn't want him, or love him even, but he had hurt me, and my heart needed time to repair the damage he'd caused. So I kept him at arm's length where I could, but the meal with the pack's alphas was long overdue. I was owed a chewing out for my part in the showdown that happened on my grounds where no fewer than 56 shifters had met an ugly and pointless end. Also, I wasn't a pretty little docile shifter who would be popping out furry babies for them to dote on. I had no idea what kind of babies we would make. A Nephilim and a prehistoric shifter would be an interesting genetic mix. Ugh, I needed to not be thinking of babies with Hudson. In order for babies, we needed to be having sex, and that would involve me taking him firmly out of the doghouse, which I wasn't ready to do. Hopefully, I could wrap this appointment up quickly. If not, then I would reschedule it for the morning, ensuring I could meet Hudson in the parlor in exactly... I glanced at the grandfather clock. 10 minutes. That was ample time for most medical issues facing vampires. Maggie waved at me from her perch on the reception desk. I pointed at the chair. We aren't running a bar. Sit in the seat I provided. She huffed in true teenager fashion, but slid off the desk and into the chair with all the feline grace her animal afforded her, her brunette hair bouncing like her mood. Maggie was incapable of remaining mad at anyone. She was like a ray of sunshine everywhere she walked. I left my supernatural friends on the main floor and descended to the basement. The office door was wedged open, and soft mumblings of male voices floated out to greet me. I stepped through and paused to take in my clients. Both were clad in fashionable skinny jeans and cashmere sweaters. I hadn't met them before, which wasn't unusual in itself, as there wasn't a great call for a doctor among vampire kind. They didn't suffer from viral infections or common ailments. Broken bones did occur, but given they were as strong as steel, it was rare, and more often than not, they healed at a rapid rate. Sometimes so much so, the bone needed to be rebroken and set correctly. The rounder of the two males stood with his arms folded but was hunched over slightly, like he was in pain. His white blonde hair fell over his gray eyes, and his lips were pressed into a tight line, making them almost as pale as his skin. The other, a red-haired, slim male with hazel eyes, swiveled on my client chair to face me.
"We have been kept waiting long enough. When will the Undertaker be here?" he snapped.
Ugh, that nickname was the bane of my life. I was 5'2" in heels, with flaming copper hair and pouty pink lips. No one believed I was the Undertaker, the famed supernatural doctor of death. I rounded the desk and sat in the executive chair. My office hours are 8 till 4. My receptionist can make you an appointment for tomorrow as you leave.
Young lady, this is no time for dress-up,
the vampire across from me said. My gaze snapped to his, and I leveled him with the Roberts stare I'd learned from my grandmother. The vampire shrunk away from me. Smart man. His monster sensed mine and recognized it was severely outmatched. The blonde-haired vampire let out a small groan and clutched his stomach.
I cannot bear this pain for another night.
I frowned. What on earth was wrong with him? Vampires didn't get stomach aches. What happened? I asked. The vampire in the chair grimaced.
There was an accident. We were cooking moussaka,
the pained one added in a rush. Last I checked, Greek food was not poisonous to vampires.
Ewan slipped, the one across from me stated.
On what?
The eggplant.
Oh, no. I glanced at the clock on the wall. This was going to take longer than the 6 minutes remaining before Hudson came to investigate where his mate was, but I couldn't leave him in this state. Was it whole? I asked. The vampires' gazes locked on each other as they silently communicated. They should know if the damn vegetable was whole when it slipped.
Spit it out, Morgan,
Ewan said through a grimace.
She's a doctor, so patient-doctor confidentiality applies, right?
He checked. I nodded. Of course, and it would go much easier and quicker if you were honest with me. It will also make a difference in how I approach the problem. Morgan sighed and ran a hand through his hair.
It was whole, stalk end first.
I resisted the urge to lecture them on the practices of safe sex, because this experience would deter them from making the same mistakes. With the large and wide variety of toys on the market, there was really no need to experiment with vegetables these days, and I mean large as in eggplant-sized. "How long?" I asked. Morgan tilted his head and moved his hands about a foot apart. "Wow. No. They clearly didn't purchase their vegetables at the local Walmart, because I had never seen an eggplant that big. Perhaps they shopped at the organic farmer's market that visited every other Monday? I'd been meaning to try it out." "I mean, how long has it been in there?" I clarified. Morgan flushed pink. "Oh, since Wednesday evening." Today was Friday. No wonder he was in pain.
"Can you help me?"
Ewan pleaded. With the eggplant? Yes. With his dignity? Unlikely. That said, literally hundreds of people presented with this problem up and down the country at the local emergency room. Not specifically eggplants, although they were among the long and wide things that people seemed to slip on, accidentally impaling themselves. I nodded and pushed to my feet. "Follow me," I told him. Morgan stood and I pointed at him. "Not you. Let's leave a little mystery intact for your relationship." Morgan plonked himself back in the chair, looking relieved as Ewan shuffled to follow me. I let the door bang closed, sealing us inside my examination room. "If you could drop your jeans and then lie on your left side, please." The pain was clearly more persistent than his dignity, because Ewan's jeans hit the floor faster than I could blink. He bent to unlace his sneakers, giving me a wonderful view of his tighty-whities. He groaned and leaned on the long, black cushioned table. I bent and undid his shoes for him, his ass pressing against my head. I pulled them off, followed by his jeans, and finally his underwear, then helped him into position on his side.
"You're stronger than you look,"
he commented between groans as he curled into himself, giving me perfect access. "Looks can be deceiving," I uttered while opening a new box of gloves and snapping on a pair. I blinked at the little Rudolphs dotted on them. Clearly, Maggie had been in charge of ordering supplies this month, because there was no way I had ordered festive-themed medical gloves. Considering where I was about to shove Rudolph's big nose, I didn't think they were appropriate. I rummaged in my baby delivery kit drawer, finding the instruments I needed, along with some numbing cream, which would help the passage of the vegetable.
"What are you going to do?"
Ewan muttered, trying to look over his shoulder. I put a firm hand on his back. "You need to keep in this exact position for me." He tensed and stared straight ahead.
"Okay."
I squirted some of the cream onto my finger and began massaging it into his anus. Did it say something about me that I would rather be doing this than sharing a meal with the pack? Definitely. I thought of Dangerous Dave, the pack's head of security, and the never-ending suspicious looks he gave me every time he was over at my house, which was often, given his boss had holed up here. I placed a firm hand on Ewan's hip and did a little internal investigation. It wasn't in too deep, and the rounded end meant I could try to use the less invasive equipment.
"Do you feel it?"
Ewan asked. I blinked. Did I feel the foot-long eggplant lodged in his ass? "No, Ewan, it has gone for a wander through your intestines. Good news, though, it will sprout out of your mouth in the next few days." "I do. Don't worry. I will have it out in a minute or two." I glanced at the clock on the wall. Ugh, I was now late. Hudson wasn't the most patient male. He would come looking for me sooner rather than later. I withdrew my finger. The cream had both a numbing and relaxing effect on the muscle. Good thing, too, given the width of this unfortunate vegetable that would never see its potential as an ingredient. What a waste. Maneuvering the little plastic cup so it gripped the base of the eggplant, I made sure it had a good seal. "Okay, Ewan, I need you to stay relaxed and concentrate on keeping your breathing nice and steady for me." His hand gripped the side of the table, and he made a big show of breathing loudly. Luckily, the cream had done its job and was helping his anus to stay relaxed. Otherwise, this would result in a trip to the emergency room where they could sedate him. I gripped his hip and gently started to pull. The deep purple vegetable slowly made its appearance into the world, and it kept coming and coming. I caught the end of the vegetable before it smashed to the floor.
"Is it out?"
Ewan grumbled.
"It certainly is."
I examined the vegetable. "And good news, it's intact, stock and all. Cora Roberts, rescuer of wayward vegetables." He glanced over his shoulder at me.
"Thank you, doctor."
I nodded, a little in awe of the fact that this had been lodged inside of him. It was more than a foot long, definitely not a Walmart purchase. "Do you go to the farmer's market?" I asked as Ewan dropped his feet to the floor and began dressing.
"Every other Monday, the organic fruit and veg is sublime."
I detached the ventouse cap traditionally used to help the delivery of babies and waved the eggplant at him.
"You want this?"
His eyebrows climbed off his face.
No. You may dispose of that."
"You sure? You can't moussaka without eggplant."
"We have another."
"Oh, boy. Put it in the dish this time."
"Don't worry, doctor. My lesson has been learned."
He slips on his sneakers and looks around the room. Pay Maggie on the main floor as you leave. Standard consult fee only." Someone rapped their knuckles against the door. Ewan opened it and came face to face with Hudson. They stared at each other for a hot minute. Then Hudson stepped back and allowed Ewan to leave. Hudson's fitted shirt flirted with his muscles like a koala wrapped around a tree. His blue stonewashed jeans had the same issue. A perpetual 5 o'clock shadow gave his strong jawline definition. He was the epitome of everything masculine, and being a red-blooded female, I paid attention. That said, he was still semi in the doghouse, and he was proving to me day by day that he was sorry. I'd put the brakes on our budding relationship because he'd reversed his feelings over concerns about his political standing and the optics of dating the granddaughter of a rival faction. Then the idiot had jumped into a hellhole to save me. It was complicated. His deep-set hazel eyes were trained on me as he squinted at the offending vegetable still in my hand. Right, the pack meal.
"Traditionally, guests bring wine, flowers, or chocolates."
His voice rumbled and caused a little shiver to dance down my spine. "I'm hardly a traditional type of girl, but this isn't fit for consumption." I turned and dropped the eggplant into the clinical waste bin along with my Rudolph gloves. Then I began scrubbing my hands in the metal sink.
"You look pretty," he said, edging closer.
I looked okay. I was in a silver dress rather than jeans and a t-shirt, or if it was a big day at the office, slacks and a blouse. My hair was twisted into a simple updo rather than the standard ponytail. A splash of makeup made my pixie features a little more mature. I raised a brow and glanced at him, the warning in my gaze clear. I might be attending a meal with a pack's heavyweights, but that was to try to smooth over the rift caused by the loss of life on my land. Regardless of our relationship status, this meal would be necessary. He was trying to read more into it than I was willing to give. "Thank you," I said, wiping my hands on a towel. I stalked out of my examination room and into my office. I yanked open the desk drawer and withdrew a bottle of whiskey. Hudson whistled low as he twisted the bottle to face him.
"Bal Blair's. Now that's a gift worth celebrating."
Not too flashy, but not cheap either, being the perfect gift for a group of people who appreciate their food and drink. I pushed the drawer shut with my hip and led the way up the stairs, finding the vampires had already left. Maggie grinned at me and waved. I turned toward her to collect my final part of the gift. She lifted a round tin from under the counter and handed it toward me. Maggie's cooking was not for the faint of heart, but her cookies to die for. I made triple chocolate chip, oatmeal, and lemon. Thank you. I'll be back in a few hours. Call me if you need anything.
I won't need anything.
Ugh, please need something. I spun and faced the principal, who was holding the front door open for us both. After you, he said with a grin, which spoke as to how much he was enjoying watching me squirm. The cool night air made goosebumps erupt on my arms. Why is my Bugatti parked out front? I wondered. Technically, it was Sebastian's Bugatti. He was my best friend, the vampire crown prince of North America, and he kept losing his baby to me in bets.
I thought you might like to drive,
Hudson said as we descended the steps and he dangled the keys in my face. He knew I would be nervous about the meal and had decided to let me drive my sports car to take my mind off it. A car he hated, given his large frame. He also detested letting anyone else drive, unless it was Dave. He was a control freak. I swapped my gifts for the keys and, with a huff, got into the driver's side. I slid the seat forward and pumped it up, damn oaf. Hudson watched me reposition the chair with barely contained amusement. Two could play at that game. My foot hit the gas and we peeled out of the driveway at breakneck speed. Hudson cursed a blue streak and I smiled. Never underestimate a Roberts woman. We always got the last laugh. Chapter 2. Have mercy on my soul, because I would not be forgiving. The Pit was White Castle's answer to anything entertainment-related. Quiz nights, speed dating, 70s-themed disco, you name it, Karen, the owner, had thought of it. She was a whiz at reinventing her premises to keep it up to date with the trends. That said, its sticky carpets and chipped tables needed a major overhaul to not make you feel like you were going to catch a new and suspicious disease. The Pit was neutral territory, something Hudson had insisted on for this dinner that I had successfully avoided four times, given it was a weekly occurrence that he attended with his alphas. This was the forum for the different shifter species to iron out any issues overseen by the principal who ruled them all. It was clear that their major grievance wasn't with each other, but rather with me. That was okay, I was a big girl, I could handle some alphas. After all, I put up with Hudson's domineering ass on a daily basis.
You ready for this?
He asked as I cut the engine. I squeezed the steering wheel before turning to him. How angry are they?
Stick with the story, you'll be fine.
Right. The fictitious tale of how Lucifer had tried to commandeer the pack from Hudson by taking control of the shifters, and when Hudson had refused to bow to his rule, Lucifer had murdered the shifters to try to get him to bend to their will. There were so many damn holes in that story, but he'd been spinning it for the last month. Hopefully, this meal would be a lot of hot air and anger. I chewed my bottom lip and dragged in a breath. I couldn't avoid it forever. I opened the door and was still climbing out of the car when Hudson appeared at my side and offered me his hand. I took it, grateful for the support of the biggest, baddest shifter around. I was pissed at him, not stupid. He threaded his fingers through mine, and we set off toward the entrance. Laughter pealed out the door. Great. We were late. Way to make a good impression. Hudson kept propelling us forward until we emerged inside the main room. Tonight, the lights were on bright, and the dance floor had been used to house the tables shoved together to make one long dining table. Around it was a crowd of 10 shifters who paused their conversations and swept their gazes toward us. The hairs on my arms lifted. Magic splashed around the room, powerful flares of invisible lightning that humans would put down to that creepy feeling that raised the hair on their napes and made them run up the stairs to the safety of their beds. A mix of male and female, their gazes ranged from curious to hostile. Hudson guided me toward the head of the table, where two empty chairs awaited us. He pulled out the one next to Dave, and I sat in it, grateful to be next to a friendly face. Dave glanced at me. Okay, so not friendly, but familiar. Hudson sat at the head and placed the whiskey and cookie tin down on the table like he had had the forethought to bring a gift. Bah, thanks for making me look bad.
From us, he declared.
Okay, now that was some smart maneuvering. I could deny they were from us, making me look like I hadn't brought anything at all, or I could remain quiet and reinforce the fact he was parading me around like I was his mate. That status had yet to be confirmed. Dave arched a brow but kept silent. Smart man. The female opposite me on Hudson's left I already knew. Mercy Stevenson was a tall, blonde, blue-eyed devil who had tried hooking her claws into Hudson's heart. He had made it clear that he was not interested, and she persisted like dog shit inside the grips of sneakers. No amount of washing could get rid of the smell, but it would eventually fall away the more you trotted into the ground. Mercy leaned forward, and I was in momentary fear of her boobs making an appearance on the table. She'd clearly forgotten a bra this evening, because there was no way she could be wearing one under the tiny scraps of black material covering her nipples. I knew she was an alpha, but I hadn't taken her for one of the pack leaders. I wondered if she was always at these weekly meetings, or if this was a special occasion where she came to flaunt her familiarity with Hudson in my face, like those boobs.
Good to finally see you here, Cora, she breathed.
Her voice was a tinkling bell in the air that made me want to punch her in her pert little nose. So she has been here every week. I glanced at Hudson. Would it have killed him to let me know? Indigo chose that moment to raise her head and peer at the bitch across from me.
Can I eat her?
Indigo asked in my mind. Mercy jerked back in her seat, and her fingers made a hasty retreat from their path to Hudson's arm. They couldn't hear Indigo, but another animal instinctively knew when a bigger beast was in their midst. No, not yet anyway. My beast existed in an uneasy alliance inside me. For much of my life, I had hid the separate, soul-sucking being, wrapped her up in chains and protection spells to prevent her from appearing. But since the showdown with my father, she'd broken free, and now there was no putting her back in her cage. She'd claimed Hudson's animal, Keverin, as a mate, and as she explained to me on a regular basis, they were waiting for us idiots to catch up to the inevitable. A prehistoric saber-toothed tiger and the daughter of death? What could possibly go wrong? Mercy blinked, and a dash of color pinked her cheeks. If anything, the blush made her even prettier. A strong hand wrapped around my knee under the table, and I glanced at Hudson, who gave me an amused smirk. Indigo settled, but didn't slumber. She thought she was being challenged for her mate, and would answer the call in a swift and bloody manner that wouldn't endear me to the pack. Another male stood, stationed in the middle of the table.
Miss Roberts, we have been eagerly awaiting your attendance at our weekly meals so that we may welcome you into the pack.
My gaze narrowed. This felt like an ambush, not a meal. Hudson opened his mouth, no doubt to inform me who was addressing me. Good evening, Gordon. How is your youngest, Hattie? Has her broken arm mended okay? Hudson's mouth snapped closed. I still held some secrets, it seemed. Some of which included treating the pack's ailments when their resident doctor was too busy or needed more specialized equipment. I glanced at Norbert, my fellow medical professional. He'd patched me up a time or two.
She is recovered, thank you, Cora,
Gordon muttered before sitting in his chair. I was not going to be bullied by a bunch of hot air blowing shifters.
I've not had the pleasure of meeting you, an older woman said, leaning around Gordon from the other side. I'm Kira,
Benedict's wife and co-alpha of the cats, I stated with a nod. The rest of the table introduced themselves,
a little taken aback at my knowledge of their identities. I hadn't been raised by just anyone.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?